I'm going to call the committee to order. We have to probably adjourn early because DFL caucus is at 11:30, so we're going to get started. We have Representative Hilty's bill up first, and even though we don't have a quorum, we'll get started. Several committee members are in and out of other committees, and I believe, Representative Hilty, that this bill you want laid over for possible inclusion in that. Is that right?
Madam Chair, that would be correct.
Okay. So welcome to the committee, and Representative Benson, would you like to move Representative Hilty's bill?
Yes, Madam Chair, I'd like to move House File 3701 for possible inclusion.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members. House File 3701 is a bill which would require townships or units of local government units that are in a non-urban primary service area for an ambulance service to pay a fee to that service under certain circumstances. The situation that we have in my area, and I believe it's very common statewide, is that currently ambulance services in many areas of the state, of course, are required to provide service in their primary service area, but often many of the recipients of that service are not required or contracted or in any way obligated to pay for that service, which particularly in these times is very significant problem. Madam Chair, I have with me at the table Mr. O.J. Doyle, who may be familiar to members of the yes. committee. I think he's probably familiar to almost every member of the legislature, who has spent a great deal of time wrestling with this problem, and I would like to turn it over to him to describe the nature of the problem and our efforts to deal with it.
Thank you. Welcome to the committee, Mr. Doyle. If you introduce yourself, please.
Thank you, Madam Chair, members of the committee. My name is O.J. Doyle, and I am a lobbyist for the Minnesota Ambulance Association. Just if I might preface my remarks by saying this is the second allusion to my age this morning, and it's not even noon. I'm feeling rather ancient. As Representative Hilty said, I'll back up, try and make this as brief as possible. Minnesota is very unique amongst the other states in that we have a system for emergency ambulance called primary service areas. So every part of the state is covered by a licensed ambulance service, but there's no competition. If there is a single franchise that is issued to a single ambulance service, in return for that franchise, everybody who requests an ambulance gets one, regardless of ability to pay, source of payment, or anything else. And it's a system that is the envy of most other states. Deleterious competition doesn't exist. A lot of money isn't wasted on marketing, lobbying local public officials. With the long-term license, providers invest in their community, in their equipment, and become an integral part of the emergency response system in that area. There's been a belief that if you can get in the ambulance business, you're going to get rich. To be honest with you, 15 years ago, if you had a moderate or large-sized ambulance service, that was probably true. Not rich, but at least you could make a profit. Congress, in their infinite wisdom, roughly 13 years ago, changed the entire means by which ambulance services are reimbursed under Medicare, which is our single largest reimbursement entity. And as a result of that, Minnesota lost 38% of our revenue from one year to the next. The money was just gone. And so under that, services have had to adapt. Smaller operations are particularly hard-pressed. even some of the larger multi-jurisdictional ambulance services are hard-pressed. You have to get creative. You have to offer additional services. And in many cases, increasingly, you have to go to the local units of government for a revenue source. You can go in and charge $5,000 for an ambulance call. You're not going to get paid. I mean, nobody reimburses at what the charges are. So as revenues tend to decrease, the costs are going up, and it's expensive to have an ambulance available 24/7. Your costs are involved in waiting to respond, being available. And with the decrease in revenue, increase in cost, there is increased pressure to go to local units of government to secure some sort of a subsidy under some mechanism. The legislature has been very supportive of the ambulance industry over the years by allowing the creation of EMS taxing districts, revenue recapture. We have a number of tools which have sustained us over the last 13 years since the changes in Medicare reimbursement. However, that's not even able to keep us adequately funded. Right now, many local units of government do contract with an ambulance service to help keep them operationally sound financially, but not all do. And so Representative Hilty's bill is an attempt to encourage the non-participating local units of government, either townships or counties, to help maintain the minimum subsidy level so that the ambulance services can stay in business. This bill, frankly, Madam Chair, I think we've talked with Representative Hilty and the Senate author, Senator Lori, the bill needs some tweaking, needs some work. But we felt that it was important in working with you to raise the issue so that people understand kind of the brutal financial situation that we're in, and we're looking for ideas. And this is, I think, a blank sheet with a few ideas on it that can move forward as time goes on. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Any questions from committee members? Representative Saylor.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And I guess I would just, my question is, you know, where this might lead us for small towns, you know, that are getting, you know, potentially less government aid, and as our small towns are, you know, suffering, trying to figure out how to pay for the services that they have. Well, this, do you think this would potentially increase problems for these very small towns so that those areas end up being underserved with regard to ambulance service? I recognize this says may, it's a permissive. But I'm just wondering where this might go down the road. And you said that you were kind of looking at tweaking some things. I wondered if that might be one of them.
Mr. Doyle.
Madam Chair, Representative Saylor, excellent point. The reduction in local government aids is another one of the factors that's precipitating the financial hardship. I think the reality is that 10 years from now, if I'm still sitting here, if I'm able to sit here, I think that you're going to find that the small town ambulance service is going to be a thing of the past. I think that it's we have demographics are making it very difficult to recruit and retain volunteers, and so your smaller services are probably going to disappear. However, I will say, and we can talk about this separately if you'd like, we do have some ideas on consolidation of ambulance services, how we can take a number of services, merge them into a single entity with one or two full-time people to keep operating. And if you have a larger service operating with some volume, then your financial needs will tend to be a little less. And also under that scenario, you can hire professional billers. A lot of ambulance services we've found around the state don't maximize their revenues. It's so complicated now that you have to have full-time professional people doing all of the billing. So we're working on a number of issues to maximize our resources before we go and say, could you just give us the check? You know, I mean, I think that the industry has been very conscientious about that. And your comment about putting small cities that are already in extremis further in the financial hole is certainly not our intent. And we have talked to the League of Cities and also the townships, and we plan to be working with them to try and come up with some ideas.
Thank you. Representative House.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I'm just slightly confused. My ambulance service, I think you're aware of Walker Ambulance Service.
Yes.
I don't think LGA would affect them because they charge every township and city a fee every year. So I'm confused on the first page, line 115, about the authorization that the designated to serve a non-urban primary service, but then they may impose a fee for the service on any local unit of government if that local unit of government has not paid a negotiated fee to ambulance. Now, we don't have that problem where they all pay. Why isn't that, why aren't we doing that statewide? And then if one township did not pay, it appears to me that this bill would allow then the ambulance service to charge that township a fee. Why can't we do it the way Walker Ambulance Service does it and just do it statewide and have everything work perfectly?
Mr. Doyle.
Madam Chair, Representative House, there are differing degrees of commitment in some areas of the state towards subsidizing the ambulance service. And it's not everywhere, it's just certain areas, but there's a belief among some that they're already getting the service. The ambulance is licensed, they're forced by law to provide the care, so why should we pay them? They have to do it anyway.
Madam Chair, a follow-up?
Representative House.
Yeah, I know if you're traveling south on Highway 6 heading to Longville, and if you're on the east side of the highway and there's a heart attack victim, and somebody on the west side with a stub toe, you have to pick up the person with a stub toe. You don't have to pick up the person with the heart attack because they're out of the district. But what Walker did is Cass County simply drew the boundary and told everyone, you're in it, you have to pay. They said, no, you're going to pick us up anyway. You can't leave us dying on the sidewalk. And Cass County said, no, you're going to pay, period. And I believe we pass a state law that said the counties could do that?
Mr. Doyle.
Madam Chair, Representative House, I don't believe so. There's permissive language all throughout the statute about levying, taxing, bonding for operations, but I may be misunderstanding your question.
Okay, Madam Chair.
Mr. Powell.
I remember this because it was a civil war up in our area.
Yes.
With a few townships that simply, we ain't going there. You know, you're going to pick us up anyway. And I know I worked with you on this.
Mm-hmm.
And my memory is bad, too. I'm probably just a couple years older than you. And so I'm suffering this morning also, but physically I'm okay. It's my mind that's not working right now, but it seems to me that we did something or found something in law that said a county could do this. And if it wasn't exactly correct, we tweaked it enough where Cass County then had the authority to just go do this. And it worked. And it's worked well ever since. The difficulty Cass County had was going into Hubbard County. And they made some arrangements there because some of the Hubbard County townships and cities were, okay, you know, you got a good service, we'll use it. But I'm sure, I support this bill, I love what you're doing, but I just, wouldn't it be better to just give counties the authority to create the ambulance district, tell the townships and cities, you got to be in here, you have to pay, and come see us in 10 years if it's not working right?
Mr. Doyle.
Madam Chair, Representative Howes, I think that you touched on what the basis of the issue is. The county made the decision to go ahead and levy, period.
Mm-hmm.
In some venues in Minnesota, local units of government have determined that they are not going to levy and saying to the ambulance service, you figure it out. I think that's really what the difference is. I remember being a little bit involved in the situation up there, that, and you did a wonderful job of helping arbitrate that whole situation. However, I think that after there was some educational efforts done with local officials and your involvement and the Ambulance Association and the state to a certain extent, I think everyone said, well, yeah, we should really levy. But there are some areas of the state that there's not a good understanding of how the EMS system works, what the costs are involved, and there tends to be a reluctance. Clearly, all of our membership would much rather work sitting down over a cup of coffee in a, you know, friendly atmosphere and try and work out something, but in many cases, it's just not there.
Well, Madam Chair, just a comment to follow up.
We're going to be laying this over, so one of the things I can say is, you know, maybe we can have some more conversation with you and the author and Mr. Doyle, and
sure.
Put it up by the time we come back to the full committee. Would you like to do that?
All right.
Okay. So thank you very much for this, Representative Benson. I believe your motion now is that this bill be laid over for possible inclusion in the omnibus, this committee.
That's correct, Madam Chair.
Thank you very much, and I think those were, that was a very good discussion, and if you all could come back to us if you want to with the change.
Madam Chair, thank you, and we look forward to continuing the discussion.
Thank you very much. I'm moving us along a little bit, members, because we have a shortened meeting today. We'll be done at 11:30, so keep that in mind. And the next person I want to call down is Representative Hansen. I believe he's here, and interesting. We have with us the 12th grade students from Princeton High School. We got any hockey players in this group here? Raise your hands if we do. Okay, you might be especially interested in this next bill. Welcome. We're always glad to have high school students with us. Someday you're going to be sitting in these seats, so pay attention. Representative Hansen, welcome to the committee.
And, thank you.
We'll move your bill. Representative Saylor, do you want to move this bill?
Madam Chair.
Excuse me.
I'll move House File 3512. Is it to, where is it going, Madam Chair? Is it going back to Finance?
We're sending it to Finance, yes. Representative McNamara moves House File 3512 be recommended pass and be forwarded to Finance. Representative Hansen, I believe you have an amendment to the bill, too. So, Representative McNamara, if you'd like to...
Maybe
it's
I should.
A delete everything amendment.
I don't think we have it.
It's a DE1. I think it's Thank just you. Been handed out, or it's just coming your way, I believe. From
maybe, Madam Chair, if I could just explain a little bit, because it's going to be a little bit complicated.
Sure.
Here.
Do you have it, Representative McNamara?
No, I don't think
it's going around.
Yeah. Okay. All right. Representative McNamara moves the DE1 amendment, and Representative Hansen, why don't you go ahead and explain it.
Thank you, Madam Chair and members of the committee, and there is House File 3512 was introduced and for the purpose of trying to deal with the issue of carbon monoxide in indoor ice arenas, and it has three components. The original bill has three components, looking at monitoring devices, changing the Mighty Ducks grant program, and dealing with compliance and enforcement. What you're being handed out, you actually have two amendments, and these amendments are the results of a lot of discussion over the past 2 weeks, and then I received some more input last evening from the Ice Arena Association, and so the DE1 amendment makes substantial changes to the House file, and then the A7 amendment makes changes to that. And
okay.
The DE1 amendment.
Mr. Chair, just to hold on a second. I make sure everybody's got the amendment here, especially the maker of the motion. Representative McNamara, do you now have the. Representative McNamara? Excuse me. I want to make sure you've got both amendments there.
Madam Chair, I do have two amendments. The DE1 and I'd be glad to move the DE1.
Let's
I haven't
get this
seen
bill
it yet.
In the.
And do you want to move do you want to move the DE1 first and have that accepted?
Yes, and I think actually what we can do is incorporate the A7 amendment into the DE1 amendment, if that's okay with You represent McNamara?
Yep. I'll incorporate the A7 into the DE1.
Okay. The amendment is before us. Any discussion? All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Opposed, no. Thank you. Now you have the bill in the order that you prefer it. Representative Hansen.
Thank you very much, Madam Chair and Representative McNamara. What the amendments do is focus on a couple of additional things related to the indoor ice arenas. In the past year or two, there have been some acute incidents where there have been high carbon monoxide levels that have resulted in folks being sent to the emergency room. I believe I sent out to the committee yesterday a copy of a police report that from Morris where there was a high carbon monoxide incident. In addition, I have a constituent who has brought up issues relating to chronic carbon monoxide exposure. So there's an acute and a chronic exposure question. Minnesota is one of three states that currently have a standard relating to carbon monoxide. And we have had that since 1977. It's 30 parts per million. The Minnesota Department of Health administers the program, and they are currently in a rule writing process. I provided input to that rule writing process. The reason for the bill is I think there are things that can be done and should be done relating to trying to prevent these acute incidents from occurring and address the chronic exposure questions. So what I've done, currently the Minnesota Department of Health has a certificate of approval process through their rulemaking. We make that a license for operators, like a operator license for the rinks. In your packet, you have a summary of numbers of that the health department has prepared of number and type of rinks and resurfacers. The challenge that comes with carbon monoxide in the ice arenas is internal combustion engines, whether they're on a resurfacer or whether they're on an edger or another engine that is an internal combustion engine. What I'm doing in the amendments is trying to deal with emissions control, operator competency, and dealer or the operator of the ice rink management. So having a license for the ice rinks that would give the health department the authority for dealing with those ice rinks where they pay a fee that would help pay the cost of this program because it's currently a general fund program. Secondly, you would have a certification program where the operators of the an operator of the ice rink would be going to training, and that training would be on operation of the equipment, whether it's the ice resurfacing or edger equipment, or monitoring devices, or compliance and enforcement issues and the issues related to the rule. I also put in a requirement that by January 1st, 2011, that there be retrofitting of the internal combustion engines in the rinks. So I'm dropping some of the monitoring requirements, but saying we should look at emissions control. Currently, there are a number of rinks that have electric resurfacers. Not as many have electric edgers. When you look at the issue of internal combustion engines, one of the manufacturers has retrofitted their equipment since 2003, or has equipment since 2003 with catalytic converters. The health department has indicated that if you have emissions control, you can reduce the carbon monoxide and the nitrogen dioxide by up to 75%. So what's the difference in the amendment that we're doing versus the bill? We're shifting towards emissions control and trying to reduce the emissions in the building. We're saying then over a period of years, you could move towards electric resurfacers, or if you have electric resurfacers now, you could, most places that have electric resurfacers do have a backup of an internal combustion engine resurfacer or an edger. So we provide for a temporary permit if you are using an internal combustion engine within the item. We make the statute for the Mighty Ducks grants, because all of this is going to cost money. We make this Mighty Ducks statute eligible for retrofitting for ventilation systems, some of those monitoring devices that would be bondable. Now, there currently isn't any money that's gone into the Mighty Ducks grants for a number of years, but this would provide that if that money does occur, that it can be used for retrofitting ventilation systems and other equipment in those things. We also talk about placarding so that there's notice, just like on a cigarette box, that there may be carbon monoxide here and that you should be aware of that. And we provide for compliance and enforcement so that there's reporting of what has been happening. So there's a lot of changes in the amendments that have just been adopted, but primarily what those do is they shift the focus of the bill from the monitoring equipment to emissions control so that we can eliminate or at least try to reduce these questions of having folks who are exposed to high concentrations of carbon monoxide to have those incidents eliminated, if not reduced to zero. And I believe there probably are a number of folks who want to testify.
Okay. First of all, thank you. And we'll get to people who might want to testify from the audience. Are there any questions from committee members first? If not, let's... Representative McNamara.
Well, Madam Chair, I just want to clarify. I believe Representative Hansen, I think I signed on to your bill. I didn't see it listed in our research summary, but I believe I am. But I've got a number of concerns. One, are you going to talk about... now I see in your I think it's just in your delete all, you have some obligations of the commissioner of the Department of Health. Do we know what the costs are of the department for that? And then I'm wondering, what about the state impact? Do we have a fiscal note for the cost of all the $150 and how many of the arenas are owned by the state? And how are we dealing? Do we have those costs listed somewhere?
Representative Hansen.
Madam Chair, Representative McNamara. The Department of Health had prepared a fiscal note based on the bill. They, with the amendment, they have not had time to adjust that fiscal note. They pulled that fiscal note, I believe, because they knew that there would be changes to the bill. So the fiscal note that was prepared to 3512 before it was amended. They have not prepared a fiscal note to it as amended. And it would be my intent that would hopefully come between now and the Finance Committee.
Mr. McNamara?
And then if I can follow up quickly, Madam Chair, and then how are you, is the $150 pay for the full approximately $1 million of fiscal cost of biennium? Is that made to balance out? So, I mean, and then do you know how many of these arenas are owned by local government? Aren't most of them, are the majority, or how many are private?
Madam Chair, Representative McNamara, I believe in your packet you have the breakdown of how many are owned by local government. That sheet I just gave to someone before I stepped up to it. I think you have that in front of you. It talks about the school districts and the local units of government. I'm not sure where you're referencing the $1 million from, but the 150, if you figure, I think the preliminary cost estimate would that bring in about $29,000 a year, and that will not cover even the existing.
The existing
program is run by general fund, so the $29,000 is to supplement the existing program to help provide for these folks that are working on these rules under the current.
We do have the health department here. Maybe we could ask them to come down. Is this a good time for that, Representative Hansen? You want them to come out? Okay.
So this is...
Madam Chair, while they're coming down.
Representative House.
I just want to make a note that before we pass this, I would like to change the motion that this go to the Outdoor Heritage Committee because they fund the Amateur Sports Commission, and I think this will drastically affect them. Just to remind me when we get to that point, I'd like to...
All right. Well, we'll see what Representative Hansen thinks about that, too. Welcome to the committee.
Madam Chair, I'm Linda Bremer, Division Director of Environmental Health at the Minnesota Department of Health. Was there a question?
I believe there's a question about the fiscal note.
We did, as Representative Hansen said, we did the fiscal note on the original draft of the bill, so we just got a copy now of the delete all amendments. So I don't know. We'll go back and run our numbers, but we... I can't respond to that now.
That's fine. You know, maybe one thing, and I'm not sure if it would be your position or someone, but I haven't heard in the testimony yet, why are we worried about carbon monoxide? What does it do to the brain of our hockey players? Can we just have a little bit of information about that? And the people attending, of course, but I mean, it would be whole reason for this bill, I think, is I think you've been doing such a good job of dealing with all the fiscal concerns and everything else. I didn't really hear that discussion earlier.
Madam Chair, this is not a health department bill. This is a bill that Representative Hansen developed with an advocate who wants us to lower the carbon monoxide intervention level farther than we had decided to do. Currently, we're in rulemaking on the ARENA program, and we currently have a 30 part per million carbon monoxide level and 0.5 nitrogen dioxide. And we're planning, in our rulemaking, we have said that we would like to drop from 30 to 25, feeling that that's protective enough in a one-hour sampling. And we want to go from 0.5 to 0.3 nitrogen dioxide. Again, that's we're early in rulemaking. And so the 12.5 is not a number that we've proposed. We think that that's one of the reasons the early fiscal note is so large, is that would increase the number of interventions the health department would have to go out to the arenas 20 times more than we currently do. So the numbers go from about 40 a year.
Well, since that's not in the list, do you have an estimate of what it is now, since with the changed fiscal note?
Again, Madam Chair, I haven't read the language. Okay. I can't tell you.
Okay.
And Madam Chair and Representative Howes, I've met with the Department of Health for the last 2 weeks as it's been moving through, getting input from a variety of people. That's why you're seeing a variety of changes in here. And that's why you're seeing a shift in the focus to try to deal with these emissions, because we can relate to a standard if you set a standard at 12 or 20 or 30. But right now the standard is 30, and we have incidents occurring where we're going over 100 parts per million, and kids are getting sick, and they're having to go to the emergency room under the existing standard. And we want to try to eliminate that, and the way to eliminate that is to deal with the emissions. So the changes that are in here, you have an acute issue and you have a chronic issue. And we're directing the Department of Health to continue their rulemaking. But right now, the status quo is resulting with some high parts per million of carbon monoxide that are resulting in health incidents where you're dealing with not one or two, but maybe more than that, that are being sent to the emergency room.
Madam Chair, to that point.
President Powell?
Is this documented? How many times has this happened? And do we know that it's the Zamboni or the Edger, or do we know the ventilation system was operating properly? Do we know that the testing equipment was operating properly? And I believe one of the incidents occurred in an arena that had an electric Zamboni, so you need to explain quite a bit there.
Well, Representative Hansen.
And Madam Chair, that's why I sent out the health department summary, because we've had folks say, well, just exempt the arenas that have electric equipment, that's a simple solution. But there was an incident last year where they may have electric resurfacers or electric edgers, but they brought in an internal combustion engine in the enclosed space when they were working on construction, and that you had a higher carbon monoxide level. So it's not, the issue is your emissions, whether they're from a resurfacer or whether another engine or somewhere in an enclosed space. With the ice, the carbon monoxide settles. It's lower to the ground. We have younger people, smaller body weight, exerting themselves that bring in the carbon monoxide more. So what the bill is now trying to do is saying, rather than tracking that, we want to deal with the emissions control and look at ventilation improvement and all those things with funding, with Mighty Ducks, if we ever get money there. So the health department, we've met. They haven't had time, and I apologize for that, because we've been trying to make this move to get it to a place where we can achieve that health protection and not break the bank for local units of government or school districts or the other entities that have these arenas. We don't want it where the poorer areas, whether they're in the inner city or in the rural areas, that don't have the dollars to upgrade, have their folks that are using them be at a health disadvantage. That's what we're trying to do, and that's why we're trying to keep moving on it.
Chair, Representative House?
Madam Chair, just for the record, the one with the electric Zamboni, that was construction equipment that was probably put inside the building, shouldn't have been put inside the building, And if it was inside, they should have at least had separate ventilation for that, and they shouldn't have been operating that 3 or 4 hours before the kids hit the rink. So that's an exception.
And, Madam Chair, for that exception, what we've done in the A7 is saying that, let's say you have an electric resurfacer, an edger, a rink like that, but if you're bringing in the equipment, you let the health department know, and you deal with that combustion so that there is that.
Representative Saylor.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And for Representative Hansen, I'm just wondering if you have other testifiers coming forward or any information about, you know, we're figuring out, you know, how not to penalize smaller ice rinks, and the fact that, you know, municipally owned rinks are certainly not looking for any more expenditures. What I would like to know is where's Zamboni in all of this? Where, I mean, we're looking at having Mighty Ducks, you know, looking at some funding for changing the carbon monoxide emissions equipment within the buildings, but I would like to know what responsibility the Zamboni or any other of those companies have in this, because, you know, they're clearly making a lot of money off of all of these ice rinks, and if I think that they should have some skin in this game, and I think that, you know, perhaps they should be participating in part of the solution, since apparently they're part of the problem. I'd like to know what those folks have had to say about this to date, if indeed they've even weighed in.
Representative Hansen.
Madam Chair and Representative Saylor, I have not talked to any of those manufacturers specifically, and I would hope we'd use the term resurfacers, because there are a couple different manufacturers, but there have been people in the stakeholder group, and we've been meeting as a stakeholder group, who have contacted them, and that's how we know that since 2003 the firm that you mentioned does have catalytic converters on them. What I've done is I went, and I don't know if Mr. Quillis is here, but I went to the Chamber of Commerce last week, and I said, with all the business brain power we have in the state, because we have a couple major manufacturers of resurfacers, the edgers are probably older, and a variety of manufacturers, can't we figure out how to get a emissions control on this equipment? If it's a few hundred dollars to try to control the emissions and reduce those emissions, that's a much more efficient way of solving the problem, or trying to solve the problem, and can't we figure that out? So that's why you see in here a January 11 to try to have those emission controls that are on there, and I think that could be the low-cost solution to try to reduce that.
Okay, Representative Rosenthal.
Thank you, Madam Chair, and Representative Hansen. It seems that the department has come up with a 25 parts per million. How did you end up at the 12.5 parts per million?
Representative Hansen.
Madam Chair, and I think the bill has changed quite a bit in terms of setting that standard, but the 12.5 is a guide that has been used in Canada and Manitoba, and they're, like I said, in Minnesota, or in the United States, there's only three states that have any standard at all. And so looking at, we had testimony in the health committee from, and I believe the person is here who could testify again, on kind of the health standards and using that precaution of maybe even 10. So 12.5 was something where we looked that there's a number there that could have impact. Again, looking at the question of acute incidents with high parts per million or chronic exposure over a long period of time, there's not a lot of science there. I mean, this is relatively new. There's been changes since 1977 in our capacity to deal with that. And so that's why you see in this bill, we're backing away from some of that strong standard on 12.5. Not everybody's happy with that. But we're trying to deal with the emissions control and trying to make sure we can achieve some of this protection right now. And we would hope that the health department in their rulemaking would take in some of this science and look at what is the best way where you'd have a stepped response. Maybe 12.5 raises the alarms, you know, and then 20 brings to another level, and trying to make sure that there's a public health protection. It's going to be very hard for us to do that in this setting. But if we can get the information and the folks that have the knowledge in this to have input in that system, and that the department develops a stepped response to provide that public health protection, I think that's what we should do. And there are folks here who can respond to that.
Okay, I think, anything else, any follow-up? Representative McNamara, I know you want to maybe comment or speak again. How about if we get the testifiers up here since we have a short period of time, and then Representative McNamara, I'll make sure we come back to you for a question, if comment. Who all, can I see a showing of hands of who all would like to testify for or against this bill? Okay. I guess, do we have the proponents, those testifying for it first? Okay. Go ahead and have a seat, and we'll hear from you first. Okay. And if you could just take a, you know, a few minutes to tell us what your concerns are or your support for the bill, reasons. Introduce yourself, please.
Yes. Hi, Madam Chair. My name is Linda Davis. I'm a figure skating coach. Well, I was a figure skating coach until I got sick with carbon monoxide. My pulmonologist diagnosed me with chronic carbon monoxide poisoning, so that's over time. I was diagnosed last year, but it took 3 years for this diagnosis to come in. And just to talk about cost, it cost my insurance company over $50,000 of medical expense. And also out of my pocket, it cost me $750 of oxygen per month right now for trying to get well. So I would like for you to consider that when we're thinking about the health of the children that are in there day by day. And I just would like to speak about the science behind this, about 12.5, responding to you, Representative. There is some science behind this. We do have, actually, we have a lot of very well-known World Health Organization doctors that have said, actually, 9 parts per million should not be exceeded when you are exposed on a chronic day-by-day basis. So yes, there is indeed science, and there has been, I can show you, exercise-induced asthma reports. I can show you asthma caused, I mean, there's a lot of things, and I believe I've sent you, all of you, a little excerpt yesterday that shows 3 studies, you know, pointing very strongly about what happens to people that are exposed to carbon monoxide on a day-to-day basis when they're exercising as hard as we are. Because, you know, what the health department is considering is 25 parts per million, and that is for 1 hour. As a skater, we're on the ice 3-4 hours at a time. So are we supposed to say to these skaters, go home, 1 hour is exceeded, you're not safe anymore? That's not right. So we came up with 12.5 originally because of Manitoba, it did, but 10 is really what's safe. So I'm hoping that the health department, with all the data that we have, that they will do the right thing, protect the kids, and bring it down to 10 parts per million, if anything. And the health department has talked about last time about if they were to bring it down to 12.5, what would happen to infractions? And we're talking cost again. But I want to mention that the number that they said, I don't know if they'll talk about, but only 7% of the time would have been infringed over 12.5 parts per million. So that is showing to me that the rinks are doing their job. Over 90% of them are doing their job. So, you know, 12.5 parts per million is not difficult to achieve. I think the rinks are showing it right now that it is being done. So I just want you to consider that. And as considering to the cost of the monitoring device, we need a monitoring device. We don't have, we can't smell this gas. That's how I got sick, you know. And I would get on the ice seconds after this ice edger that everybody's talking about that has this big blue smoke coming out of it, seconds after that. So we need to do something to protect the kids. The hockey moms and dad want this bill to pass. They want to protect their kids. They're looking to you, lawmakers, to make that happen. So, I mean, carbon monoxide has cost me my job. I can't work anymore. I mean, the medical bills are piling up. So please, I want you to consider that cost as well when you're making your decision. Thank you.
Thank you. Thank you very much. Welcome to the committee.
Yeah, thank you. My name is Jack Rosbach. I'm an industrial hygiene engineer. I regularly monitor for carbon monoxide. I worked for the Occupational Safety and Health Administration as an enforcement officer. And I brought my meter here to today that we monitor all the time. There's no carbon monoxide in this room right now. Your carbon dioxide is a little bit elevated, and you might want them to turn up the ventilation of outside air in here a little bit. Might help a little
bit. Thank you. That's good advice.
I'm being drowsy. The the equipment that they use to monitor carbon monoxide and the nitrous oxides is equipment that was used in the 70s in their Draeger tubes, and they pull them at the point of where they suspect the highest exposure is. So you have this essentially 1 minute reading out of an entire week's worth of time. And we're able to, this device that I have can monitor continuously. I can actually record, if I just wanted to record carbon monoxide, I could record up to a month's worth or even 2 or 3 months worth of readings on this, download it and graph it out. We regularly put my monitoring device in places so that we can record at least a week's fluctuations. And I just am terribly uncomfortable with the way they monitor in these places. Even in my house, I have a carbon monoxide monitor that's up on the wall that I paid about $50 for that could tell me if I have carbon monoxide in my house. And so that is a continuous type of monitoring device. My device costs $3,000, and it's very good, but it's 15 years old. I've changed the sensors one time at about $700. So the modern technology is quite capable of doing that, and we would find those cases that you call exceptions. One of the things that I found in workplace assessments is that when people tune internal combustion devices, they often tune the fuel to air mixture too rich, and then you all of a sudden get these peak exposures that occur. I just think that the right way to go is to eventually get to all electric, get the internal combustion devices out of the arenas. But in the meantime, I think monitoring with a continuous monitor electronic device, even an inexpensive one, is a necessary protection. Thank you.
Thank you very much. Welcome to the committee.
Hi, my name is Peggy Johnson, and I'm not going to address any of the technical issues. I'm here as a hockey parent representing the families and friends from my hockey community. And what I would like to say is that the parents in the hockey community support this bill. And I do apologize. When I went to the very first meeting at the health department, it was last fall, I went and I didn't really tell any of my hockey friends about it because I thought, you know, this is such a no-brainer. I don't want to cause hysteria in the ice rinks and make people freak out and stop bringing their kids to hockey. I thought, this is a no-brainer. This bill is going to pass. And if we have to sell a few more hot dogs, or I'm a business owner, I'd be happy to fork out $3,000 and put a note saying it's important that we keep our kids' safety and health at the top of the list. And as a parent, I get that it's my responsibility first and foremost to watch out for my kids. But I have to say that many parents like me do assume that when we go into a building that there are no health risks. I see people come into the ice arena with their youngest kids, their newborn babies. Grandma and grandpas are in there with their oxygen tanks. And so my request is also, you need to let people know, like that cigarette warning, you need to let people know, because people need to make this decision on their own. And 12.5, honestly, personally, from my experience, is high from what I've heard from what the World Health Organization recommends exposure. So I don't think that number is crazy outrageous. And I want, so what I really want to reiterate here is that the parents in the hockey community, at least the like 50 or so that I'm friends with, are behind this bill. And I didn't start emailing people until a week ago Wednesday. And I think people have been calling their state reps and their senators, but I do apologize that I didn't do it sooner. So hopefully your phones are ringing and people are going to let you know how they feel about the bill. Thanks.
Thank you. Any questions from committee members for these witnesses?
Madam Chair, the last lady, where is she from?
I'm from St. Paul, Minnesota. I grew up in North Branch, Chisago County, and for the last many, many years, Como Park area. Okay. Biff Adams is my ice arena.
Representative McNamara, did you have a question or comment?
Well, probably more a comment, Madam Chair, and I guess more for procedure.
We do have some more witnesses. I believe you want to post them.
I'd probably rather let that come first, ma'am.
Okay. welcome to the committee.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Madam Chair and members, my name is Joel Carlson. I own a legal research and government affairs business here in St. Paul. I'm actually here as a volunteer today. I'm a member of the Minnesota Amateur Sports Commission, and I have been since 2003. And I can also tell you as a volunteer that I represent Minnesota Hockey, which contains over 65,000 households in Minnesota. It's the largest youth hockey organization in the country. And our biggest growth area, for just for the committee to know, is in girls hockey. We have over 14,000 girls playing hockey in Minnesota, and we're proud of the growth of that program. The Amateur Sports Commission put in a fiscal note relative to the bill as it was drafted, and as I read the delete everything amendment and trying to piece it together, I don't think that our opinion would necessarily change about the fiscal note, which is over in Representative Murphy's committee. But it was about $48,000 for us to comply with the requirements of the bill. And to put that in perspective, our entire annual appropriation from the legislature to run the Amateur Sports Commission is $270,000. So that's a significant cost concern for us. Just wanted to make you aware of that. And Representative Saylor, I have talked to Zamboni. And you need to know that 50% of the ice arenas in Minnesota, there's about 266 sheets of ice in Minnesota, and I think I've played on most of them. 50% of them are resurfaced by electric equipment right now. I cannot tell you that the amendment that they put on relative to having the Zamboni and the edger both be electric is very common. Electronic edger is not a common piece of equipment in arena. They do have them. They have some that are battery and some that are with a cord that go around. But 50% of the arenas right now have electric, are operated with the Zamboni 552 electric Zamboni. And in addition to that, they have not sold a Zamboni since 2003 that has not had an EPA-approved Type 3 catalytic converter on it. Also, a number of the ice edgers also have converters on them. We have some concerns about retrofit as it relates to the warranty of the equipment that you have and whether or not that is approved, and generally those kinds of things that you do outside of the manufacturer's approval would tend to void your warranty, and so we have some cost concerns about that as well. And as to the recommended level, I know there was some discussion about whether or not Canada had this requirement, and I understand that they have a recommended level of 12.5. It is not the rule. It is just a recommendation for them, and we could recommend zero as the appropriate level, but it's not an enforcement level that that is in place. I can just tell you that both from the state perspective, from the Amateur Sports Commission, we run the largest indoor ice facility in the country. We have 8 sheets in Blaine, 8 sheets of ice. We have never had a spike or an excursion above the current testing requirement. But for the state, the municipalities and the cities that operate these facilities, they're very concerned about being able to comply with the requirements, and we would support the Department of Health finishing their rulemaking process. We believe they are in a better position to tell us what the appropriate level for health concerns are, and no one is more concerned about the health and safety of our fans and our participants than those of us that are in the arenas all the time. I play 3 times a week. I'm in the arenas all the time. Need to know that we truly care about public health. We're just not sure that this, in the form it's in, gets us to any better place than where we're at right now. And we'd like to see the Department of Health rulemaking process proceed to a completion so that there is a bright line established. The language in the bill still requires electronic monitoring, which we have concerns about, both from the location of where the monitors are, and how effective they may be, and I think that's something the health department is looking at in their rulemaking process. Thank you, Madam Chair and members. Happy to answer questions.
Thank you. I believe we have another witness.
Madam Chair, members, my name is Ann Finn. I represent the League of Minnesota Cities, and I'm also a mom of 3 hockey players. I did want to first thank Representative Hansen for bringing this bill forward. I think the problem that is identified with this legislation is legitimate and it's real. That said, our phones are ringing at the league. The timing of having a new mandate on local governments is really difficult. And we have a lot of folks who are very, very concerned about how they would comply with this new law, if it becomes law. I did also want to mention to you that we would be supportive of any alternative solutions that we can come up with that are perhaps less onerous. We would do anything within our ability to comply with rules that come out of the Department of Health. We'll participate fully in the rulemaking process. And I just wanted to offer up one other piece of information because Mr. Carlson has already really covered a lot of the points I wanted to make. But I did hear from one of our cities that if they were to comply with this and have the ventilation system and the monitor and everything hooked up, they would also have to install a dehumidifier. And while the cost of maybe the monitor doesn't look all that high, this dehumidifying system would cost around $240,000. So when you look at that from the perspective of multiple facilities, that starts creating a pretty significant cost, and it's not something that can be absorbed by upping the concession sales or having some donations from folks in the community.
I want to ask just a question. The people that are calling you at the League of Cities are responding to the original legislation rather than the one that has been amended in this committee today, right?
Madam Chair, you're correct. Okay. And we did just get the delete all amendment when you saw it this morning. I don't know how they would respond to that, but I see a lot of the same requirements in there, only there's a little more time for complying.
Okay, there were a couple more questions from committee members. We're going to have to make this kind of short because we do want to vote on this before we leave, and we have to go to caucus shortly. So Representative McNamara, Saylor, and Benson. Hayden. Oh, and Hayden. I'm sorry, Representative Hayden. You're in there, too. Representative McNamara, you're first.
Madam Chair, if I could just go for the members that weren't here, I was the chief author of the bill when we passed the carbon monoxide detection for homes and feel real strongly it was the right thing to do. It took us a couple years to do it. We traveled to a number of committees and it changed a lot along the way. I think, Madam Chair, where Representative Hansen's intentions are good and the right thing, I asked specifically, I tried to find out from the Department of Health why we're not using like the detections we're using in the home, and there's some challenges because there's good detection available in your home, numeric, that will tell you and keep track of, and they're relatively inexpensive and you can get them battery operated. Madam Chair, I'm not sure, but if your intention is actually to try and move it to the Committee on Finance, I would not be the right one to do that, and I would either ask that I amend my motion or you ask somebody else to make the motion, because we need to have some significant discussion here, understand the delete all before us, and I think hear more from the department of what the actual cost, the mandate cost to people. And I was not aware of their rulemaking process ongoing that seems like it might be addressing some of the concerns. So I guess I would defer to you what process you want to move through. Okay. I don't want to mislead the chair. I'm not ready to move this bill to finance.
I understand. Okay, well, let's just have a little more discussion from the other members of the committee. Representative Saylor, excuse me.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And for Mr. Carlson, going back to the issue of retrofits with regard to the ice machines of various manufacture, and you stated, and it was clarified that they were all fitted since 2003. My question is, what about those machines that predate the 2003? And, you know, you mentioned that there was a problem with the warranties. Well, presumably the warranties are issued by that company. One would think that there might be some room for working with that warranty within their own jurisdiction, and perhaps they could work a little bit more closely with the arenas that own machines that are older, that predate that 2003, to be working on the retrofits. It would seem like that might be a less expensive than a number of other remedies, because I would just like to know what your thoughts are on that.
Madam Chair and Representative Saylor, what I can tell you is that from the testing that is going on right now, there are very few instances where you have a spike above the current level. I think the Department of Health reported only 44 instances of all the tests that were taken. So the point I'm trying to make is it is a small a not insignificant, but a small problem with equipment that is not fitted with catalytic converters. I don't know how big it is, and I'm sure that that's a knowable answer, and how many of them have been retrofitted and not. I don't know that particular answer, but I do know that new and modern equipment currently meets EPA indoor standards, and as to whether or not a piece of equipment manufactured prior to 2003 meets standards that didn't exist at the time, I don't have an answer for you on that.
Representative Hayden.
Thank you, Madam Chair. And Mr. Carlson, I am a relatively new member to the Amateur Sports Commission as well, and I'm glad to see you guys over there. And so I know that you have been involved for a long period of time and absolutely respect the viewpoint that you bring to the table. I don't have children that are hockey players. They're basketball players. And so when we, frankly, and when we heard this in health policy, one of the things that someone kind of made an analogy to is they said, you know, this would be like spending all day in a gym or a field house, and, you know, every so often they took a riding mower and just rolled around the gym. And so that kind of got me to thinking that we can't wait, and that our kids are in trouble, and that we with respect to Representative McNamara and some of the particulars, and respect to the League of Cities in terms of the amount of work that they may need to do, but this is a public health emergency that we need to take care of. And frankly, I feel like Representative Hansen's bill moving forward to really alert us to this is kind of way down the road, and that the cities and the Amateur Sports Commission and others that are involved, especially in youth sports, should have thought about this and should have been working on these remedies without having to have legislative action, or you should have been coming to us to say, here's what we want to do, and we want you guys to put this in statute. And so to that end, I'm going to support this. I think that it is awfully important, and I would really push the Amateur Sports Commission, in which I'm a member of, and the League of Cities and others, to really start working closely with Representative Hansen to make sure and to ensure that our kids are safe.
Madam Chair.
Very quick response. We need a couple more committee members, and then we're going to vote.
Madam Chair, Representative Hayden, you need to know that the facility at the Amateur Sports Commission has the most state-of-the-art air handling equipment available in arenas today. We have never had an incident like this, and one of the concerns that facilities have that even have state-of-the-art equipment is the cost to monitor that contained in the bill does not get us any further along on public health. Yeah. We haven't had the Amateur Sports Commission hasn't had a single dollar in the Mighty Ducks grant program since 2002. There isn't money available to retrofit a facility, and our facility doesn't need it. We've never had a situation, and we have the dehumidification equipment for year-round operation, but a lot of facilities don't. And but they still are unlikely to be out of compliance with the current Department of Health standard. That's the point I'm trying to make.
Thank you.
Thank you, Madam Chair. I know that you're trying to move on, and I can appreciate that, and that's why I think working with the author really, really closely to talk about those particular exceptions. But I appreciate the Swan Center and all of the great work that we've done. I also can appreciate that we have not been able to fund the Mighty Ducks program, but that still doesn't make me feel good about all of the kids, all of the hockey kids, all of the hockey moms and dads that are in those arenas, that they are in a safe facility. Thank you, Madam Chair.
Thank you. Representative Benson?
Well, thank you, Madam Chair. And very quick, just Ms. Finn, I'm just curious about municipalities run a lot of facilities in which the public come in. Why would this particular area not fit under, for example, the Federal Clean Air Act, for example, or other federal facilities? Do you have city halls, for example, that have high carbon monoxide levels in them, but that the public still goes in and uses those facilities? What is unique, in other words, about not regulating carbon monoxide in ice rinks compared to facilities in which a community might have a garage and they have people working to repair cars. You know, when I go to just my local garage, they have a way of exiting the exhaust from motor vehicles. And so why would this be a particular issue? Surely you have public safety concerns in municipal buildings.
Perhaps the Department of Health could help me on this one, too. But we do have air quality standards in the arenas, as I understand, and they are, in fact, doing air quality tests. It's this legislation, under my understanding of it, would essentially change the standards and require more monitoring on an ongoing basis than what is already done under the current standards.
Madam Chair and members, we do have a standard right now. We are in compliance with it. The effort to change the standard, and we applaud Representative Hansen for bringing this forward. We've had many productive discussions about this. We just don't know if we're there 100% yet, and I can tell you that it's above my pay grade to tell you what the appropriate carbon monoxide level is in the arenas. I mean, I've been in some locker rooms that would kill you. They're terrible.
Yeah.
But I'm not in a position to tell you what that appropriate standard is, and I believe that's why health is going through their rulemaking process right now to see if we need to upgrade those and what the facilities
okay.
we need to do to comply.
It looks like we have one more witness. Are you testing for or against the bill?
He's responding
I'm neutral.
To your question.
I'm Dale Dorsman with the Minnesota Health Department. I'm the
okay.
manager of the indoor
Welcome
environment.
Welcome to the committee.
Thank you. Madam Chair and committee members, to answer the question about municipalities, there are a lot of these acute things of the stories that we hear were above our regulations in the first place. So we were notified and we went back and we responded. The lower levels aren't necessarily going to take care of that. They're still going to be violated, and we're still going to follow up on them. We're still going to take enforcement action on them. So what it does do is increase the number of responses that the Department of Health will have to go out to. So we had, in the last 3 years, there was, we just took a count from our proposed level of 25 parts per million of CO, how many incidents would be reported, and it was like 44. That would be reported to us that we'd have to follow up on compared to a handful currently with the 30. If we went down to 12.5, that goes up to 800 and so many. So significant amount of enforcement and staff and enforcement capabilities that we would have to boost up to. So I hope that answers the question.
Thank you, Madam Chair. Just a quick follow-up.
Sure.
When I was teaching, we had terrible air quality in a high school, and the administration fought anything until we discovered that large trucks were running right outside the intake. One of our staff members would collapse at least once a week, and still it took us 15 years to finally get the district to do something about it. So I'm not impressed with the present regulations on carbon monoxide and air quality inside buildings.
Thank you. Representative Hansen, you want to make some final comments, and then Representative McNamara, if you're uncomfortable with continuing to make a motion on this, I'll be glad to do it. Let me know, because I think what we need to do is I'd like to hear from Representative Hansen, but I presume we can send this over to the Cultural Heritage Committee, and that's where the Amateur Sports Commission has jurisdiction, and so you can either continue, Representative McNamara, or not, but let's just hear from Representative Hansen first.
Madam Chair, and I thank the committee for the time on this. This is an important issue, and the amendments that have gone in front of you are somewhat complex. But what the committee has in front of them are choices and costs. There are costs that can be human costs, and there are choices that can be public costs, and there are choices that can be private costs. And for protecting public health, what we've tried to do here is to get a lower cost way of responding to that, looking at emissions control. So the current regimen is still resulting in incidents. And you've had testimony where we have citizens that are saying they've got some chronic concerns that they that are coming forward. This issue will not go away. I'm hoping that we can work on this through in both the House and the Senate. I know the Senate version is a little bit different. But continue as it goes through this committee process. I think the fiscal note will be much different after folks look at this. And I think there's still the opportunity to protect public health as it moves along. So I'd ask for your support.
Thank you. Representative McNamara.
Madam Chair, I'm going to let you make the motion, okay. And I'm going to be opposed. This, I don't believe this is ready to move out of this committee. I think we're setting a bad precedent here when we're moving stuff with the level of the detail of the amendment this morning, the fiscal impacts that aren't known, listening to the Department of Health, the rulemaking that's ongoing. I think we're just really setting a bad precedent moving here at this pace, and I'm going to be opposed to this. Okay. Bill moving forward.
Okay. Then I will make the motion that House File 3512 be recommended to pass to go to finance with, as amended, be recommended to pass to go to finance with the understanding that it will then be going to the Cultural Heritage Committee, I believe, and then back to finance. Well, and
Madam Chair, wouldn't House? The motion be to go to the Outdoor Cultural Heritage
the way Committee, it works,
and then it finance makes does that transfer?
The way it works, because we are a finance committee, it always stops at finance first.
Okay.
And then it'll go there. And that, my understanding from the author is he's committed to that, correct? So, okay. All right? All right. Any further discussion? If not, then House File 3512 is before us as amended. All those in favor signify by saying aye.
Aye.
Aye. Aye. Opposed, no?
No.
Motion prevails, and the bill moves on to the finance committee.
Thank you.
Thank you very much. We're adjourned, committee members.